Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take challenging problems in working life and business and find out exactly what is going on and see if there's anything we can do to make it that little bit better. And today we're going to be talking about something that annoys pretty much everyone, and that is, of course, the idea of office jargon, corporate phrases, essentially the nonsense language where inexplicably us as normal people go into work and start talking like we never, ever, ever do in our real life, with loads of random phrases which we all seem to hate and yet still insist on using. And I'm sorry, genuinely, if you're going to try and tell me that you don't do this, you are either completely kidding yourself or you are lying. It is as simple as that. Despite them being so unpopular, all of us still seem to fall into that trap. And so what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be looking into why everyone hates them so much. We're going to pick out what we think are the most unpopular, and we're also going to take a little look back at where some of these phrases come from. We've got some really funny clips. It's been a lot of fun putting this one together, and I can't wait for you to check it out. Let's get into it. So the idea around office lingo has become so popular and is such like a point of mockery that you can't go online and not find clips like this.
Push the envelope, okay? Come together as a unit. What are you doing?
Push the envelope.
We'll circle back on that, but what I need to know is the milligram percentages are way up.
What are you doing? I'm circling back, sir.
That's not what that means.
I like it.
You have to get a leg up. You find that, you get a... What are you doing?
Hey, hop it.
What?
What is it? I finished the deep dive for you,
the
sir.
The what?
The deep dive that you said.
You know, we're going to have to let you go.
Go where?
And look, that, you know, stuff like that is very funny. I absolutely highly approve of that sort of content. It makes the world that little bit better. But actually, I don't think you realise just how unpopular some of these are. So apparently, according to the National Geographic, of more than 8,000 working professionals across 8 different countries found that 58% feel that people overuse office jargon. And if given the opportunity, half of those people would just eliminate them completely from everyone's lexicon, which is actually kind of wild, because we can't get 8 countries to agree on anything. Like, this is the closest we're going to come to world peace from the sounds of it. It's just removing some of these absolute nonsense phrases. And what I think people find so frustrating is they really are meaningless, a lot of them. They're such sort of like eye-rolling sort of cliches that they just don't help anyone in the modern day setting. So I think people, when they use them, they have the piss taken out of them. And when you find yourself using them, you actually just really start to really hate yourself and are just so disappointed that you've ended up it. And I remember talking to my friend. He sort of said, it was amazing. I had 3 weeks off. It was so great. I came back sort of feeling so chilled. And then I went into the day one, had a sort of catch-up meeting, and within half an hour, I found myself liaising with this and touching base on that, and he just said it was absolutely ridiculous. And yet some of the origins of these phrases are legitimately very, very interesting, and what's quite fascinating is they really come from sort of different themes of history. So for example, we've got a lot around like the Industrial Revolution and kind of like old Victorian times, so things like drilling down, when you sort of drill down into stuff, or cogs in a wheel, sort of really sort of pulling from that kind of old school factory line assembly workers, basically. And the other big theme I've noticed, really, is I don't think you quite appreciate how many come from maritime and naval sayings. And basically, this is entirely the fault of the UK Navy, which obviously was one of the main reasons why the UK owned so much of the world at some point. And basically, what they did, it left everyone with a slight resentment towards the UK, and just dozens and dozens of these phrases, which I just did not know, or just kind of knew but hadn't quite clocked how many had come from it. So just to give you a few, because there are so many. We've got plain sailing, we've got people at loggerheads, we've got things being above board, we've got taken aback, we've got know the ropes, we've got batten down the hatches, even pipe down is a maritime phrase. Like, so many phrases come from this part of the world, which I just find really interesting. And it is really sort of curious how, you know, what was basically naval battles ended up being like really commonplace sort of office phrases. So I do find that really interesting, even as much as I find myself using them and completely hating the fact that I'm doing so. The next big theme that I've noticed, and this one you probably would expect just considering how big World War One and World War Two were to kind of the world, basically. I'm not going to blow anyone's socks off by saying that, but so many of the phrases that people perhaps used in that day and age came from that period, as this clip really nicely summarizes.
The wartime origins are apparent in phrases like boots on the ground or mission critical. But deploying software, attending an all-hands meeting, even talking about a business strategy or sales tactic uses language borrowed from the battlefield. Some more examples you could encounter as you rise through the ranks of corporate culture include on my radar, in the trenches, rally the troops, or fight an uphill battle.
And like, that is a lot, right? And I think for me, I think the sheer number of military terms to talk about, just because again, it's one of those things where if you'd thought about it, you would have said, oh yes, that's obviously from a military background. But actually you just use them so often in such like mundane and ordinary ways. It just hadn't really clocked it. So I guess going back to like the initial point in regards to how many people, you know, dislike corporate lingo, I think a lot of people don't realize how many sort of nonsense buzzwords we actually use. And military's really popular. I think I've kind of got a couple of theories. I mean, obviously, on the one hand, it makes sense. Like I said, World War II had such a global impact to everyone's lives. It's not a surprise that a lot of that kind of terminology leaked into working life. But I do think there is a sort of segment of the population who sort of like really treat work like war. And I've certainly been sent a few stories about it. So you get people who just use this like really aggressive terminology in completely unnecessary ways. It's like, look, you're just trying to run a shop. Like, you're not going, do you know what I mean? Just calm down a little bit. Those types of words are not always completely necessary. So I think that's certainly sort of chalking one up in regards to that's not really something we need to be saying all the time, for sure. And then we had, interestingly, loads of sort of like academic sort of borrowing sort of yesteryear sort of culture and then basically sort of bastardizing these words to be used for completely meaningless reasons. So British psychologist Raymond Cattell repurposed the word synergy. That one, by the way, is really unpopular. So, Raymond, I obviously don't know much about you, but you are not going to be popular on this video, I'm afraid, which was originally a Protestant term for cooperation between the human will and divine grace. So that's how has that arrived at the synergy that we use in this day and age? And the UC Berkeley philosopher Thomas Kuhn popularized the term paradigm shift in his 1962 book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And much later, Harvard professor Clayton Christensen coined the term disrupt, which has become a favourite in today's climate of startup and worship. And you go, oh my God, I've used all those words. This is not doing much for my self-esteem at all, if I'm being honest, this particular clip. And I think the reason why I think people do this, by the way, is like, you know those people who've sort of the phrases, you know, born too late to explore the world, but born too early to explore space. Like, I do think there's like a sort of adventurous spirit that just people just don't get to exercise as much as they perhaps would have done back in the day. So I do think they then have to take exciting sounded phrases and just sort of cram them into their everyday life just to sort of vaguely feel like they're as cool as some of the people back in the day. So I do think that's probably playing a part of it. And then of course you cannot go anywhere without the sort of sporting elements coming into it. So American sports in particular, of course, are particularly popular. Things like knocked out of the park, things like drop the ball. And then you have the slightly more unusual ones. And I'm going to pick two examples. So we just go, how on earth has this activity or this hobby led to us actually using it in the corporate world? And the first one is diving. Like, we have loads of those. So you can go into scuba mode, you can deep dive, you could put a hard stop. Like, all of these things come directly from scuba diving, which is just a little bit weird, but not quite as weird as skiing. Like, why do we use the phrase go off piste? It makes no sense. There's no relevance to it. It doesn't really work as a phrase anyway, and it's no relevance whatsoever beyond, I don't know, a holiday that people take on about. So it's really odd how these things sort of end up kind of sort of creeping into everything that we talk about. And look, I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm not even trying. This was so depressing. This is how much, honestly, this story has just made me painfully aware of how many of these that I use and making me doubt everything that I say. But I'm not reinventing the wheel when I sort of point this out. Like, this has commonly been something that people get really hacked off about. And actually nothing. Someone in the 1976, a guy called William Zinser, wrote a book called On Writing Well, and he really doesn't like it. And he absolutely lost the plot and just basically ranted about American corporations and their growing arsenal of jargon. And he basically says this: beware then of the long word that is no better than the short word. Facilitate instead of ease. Implement instead of do. Sufficient instead of enough. Attempt instead of try. Beware too of all the slippery new fad words for which the language already has equivalents. Paradigm and perimeter. Optimize and maximize. Prioritize and potentialize. They are all weeds that will smother what you write. Don't dialogue with someone you can talk to. Don't interface with anybody. And that's a real twist. He was ahead of his time, he was, because I feel like he would do very, very well in 2025. But what's nice about it as well is because it's kind of baked into our culture, we do start to develop our own brand new ones. They're not all borrowed from old times. We're still very much creating new ones, as this guy very funnily summarizes.
The 2025 official corporate slang has been leaked. So let's have a look at some of the stuff that we can expect to be saying. Now, the first one, we're not going to be saying deep dive anymore. We now say I'm about to go scuba mode, or an alternative for this is let's take this meeting to the Titan. Right, now some of you might have circled back before. That's all about to change. We're now saying permission to rotate office daddy. 2025, we're not saying low-hanging fruit. The new phrases will be in the peer distance, or the alternative is peer bar. There's a couple more in this document. We're using gender neutral language. There's a shift towards that. So instead of saying what's up guys, we're now saying more inclusive language, such as what's cracking you pack of cucks. And of course, number five, mental health at the forefront of the workforce in 2025. We're not saying wellness days or mental health days, simply replacing that with taking a slaycation.
So it shouldn't be as funny as it was, but it's right. And like, it's just so weird that we've just kind of ended up in this sort of part. So I think like, I guess kind of, if I was like to be a little bit less harsh towards it, I think they're sort of like, because obviously everyone you work with is one of the few groups of people you don't necessarily choose who you work with, right? You get to choose your friends, you get to kind of choose who you spend your sort of time with outside of work. But I guess work, you don't get as much of a say. So I guess like in creating like this sort of nonsense language we all use, there's probably like an inclusivity element to it, in the sense of, in the same way like cracker jokes, right? So this is my theory about sort of bullshit office jargon, right? They're very similar to the practice around cracker jokes, in the sense of the whole purpose of cracker jokes, which you sort of break around Christmas and you read them out, they're meant to be bad, right? Because the whole point of it is they're meant to be terrible. Everyone's meant to sort of groan and sort of roll their eyes, and everyone kind of feels a little bit part of it, right? Rather than trying to be too clever or anything like that. I think office jargon plays a similar role in that sense. I think there is an element of people basically just sort of saying, look, we all kind of know it's nonsense language. It's like when you start a Zoom call and you basically either ask them what are you doing for your weekend if it's on a Friday, or if it's earlier in the week you say, oh, how was your weekend, or you talk about the weather. There's just sort of like a sort of social etiquette towards using it that makes everyone feel that little bit comfortable. So if that's the case, I'm sort of going to be a little less harsh to it. But honestly, some of the ones are absolutely horrendous. And we actually put out a blast on social to ask everyone what their least popular ones are. And look, we've had some like popular polls in the past. We've had like, you know, I'd like to think our channels, we've got some nice engagement going and all of that sort of stuff. I have never seen traction like this one. This one really sort of put the cat amongst the pigeons, because my word, the amount of suggestions that we got were utterly ridiculous. There were so many from so many parts of the world. It was actually a sort of really wonderful few hours sort of going through it all with the team. But we've cherry-picked what the kind of combination of our favourite justifications and also just the most popular. And I'm going to share with you now the ones that are the most popular. And we're going to start off with this person here who summarises one of the absolute classics.
So the phrase I think that should be banned in the workplace is, we're like a family here. I've got my own family, thanks, and I can just about tolerate them most of the time. So you don't need to patronise me and pretend we're a family here when we both know I'm only here because you pay me.
It's so true. It's so fair. It's one of the biggest red flags, and it's weird, right? And I think the reason why it's such a red flag is because when people first started using the phrase, and we think we've traced this back by, we think the first person who ever did this was a CEO called Bob Chapman. But what you have to understand, and the reason why it's such a red flag now, is because back in the day when people first started using it, it was probably with like the best of intentions. Like, it really probably was. It was probably in a real sort of like, want to look after my team sort of thing. The problem was, is a few sort of less, let's say, well-intended sort of founders and business owners came along and thought, okay, some people are getting a bit of traction with that phrase. I think I might start using that myself and completely ruin it. And the reason why it's such a toxic phrase these days, right, is because family come with certain obligations, right? There's a sort of guilt, love element, which means you kind of put up with stuff from your family that perhaps you wouldn't do from a more professional relationship. Plus, there's more obligation from you to do it. And that's kind of what they feed on, right? There's sort of like a, oh, look, I know I can't give you the pay rise I promised you, but, you know, come on, for me, do you mind doing that? Do you mean, like, you see, there's that sort of guilt element that comes into it. And the reason we picked this one, beyond just how often it was some of the reactions to it was so good. So shout out to some of these people who commented on this saying, I don't even get along with my real biological family. And then someone else wrote, I know, right? If someone says that to me, I feel like asking if they're as rude and nasty as my sister. And then finally, and this is the one I'm going to give a completely meaningless award to, it's the person who just wrote, we're a family, you don't want to be part of my family, which is just absolutely excellent. So yeah, we are a family is absolutely one of those phrases that people are very keen to absolutely ban from the workplace ASAP. So the second phrase that people flagged as ones that they really would like to ban in particular is, we are heading to Scotland for this absolutely amazing clip.
Too many meetings, I keep hearing the phrase, let's circle back. That really needs to do one. Who wants to circle back? It reminds me of the clowns and the monkeys in a circus ring. And believe me, the amount of meetings for the senior leadership are the monkeys. I don't have enough fingers and toes. Thanks, Ben.
Honestly, so many problems in the world would be solved if we got more Scottish people involved, because they really do cut through. As a culture, they really can cut through the absolute nonsense. It's amazing. And I actually totally agree. I think circle back again is probably a phrase I really hate to say I've probably used at many times without even realising I'm doing so. But I think the reason it hacks people off, right, is I think it's a bit of a sort of cop out from leaders, if that makes sense. So if you're chairing the meeting and it's kind of building, everyone's sort of talking about the meeting's going nowhere, and someone just says, oh, let's just circle back. And I think the reason it annoys so many people is, like, we've just gone through all this nonsense already. I really don't want to circle back on this again. We just need someone to make the call. So I do think the reason why that particular phrase has hacked so many people off over the years, I do think is people just not really making a decision and becoming a little bit of a bottleneck. So I think what you have to bear in mind is the context of these words in regards to how you're feeling when they're used. No one says circle back after a productive meeting. Like, the very definition that someone's gone down that route and said, oh, let's just circle back to it. It's just like, no, please, can we just decide now? I don't want to go through all of this again. So that's my running theory in regards to why circle back is so much of an issue. Which brings us on to the next phase of what people want to ban when it comes to office jargon in the workplace. And this clip summarizes it beautifully.
Work hard, play hard. What does that even mean? I've never understood it. It was first said to me when I was a young 21-year-old by an equally young supervisor, and I think I can trace all of my corporate cynicism to that exact moment.
It's so fair. It's such a weird... Like, work hard, play hard, for me, is such a red flag as a phrase, because it's such a weird thing to brag. It's like, not everyone wants to go hard all the time across everything, right? It's okay to take a breather and just say, do you know what? I'm going to have a moment and just sort of pull myself together a little bit. And basically, what work hard, play hard means, if those of you don't know or perhaps not been in a situation where that happens, it basically means there's a lot of drinking. Like, that's what it means. It means everyone goes out together and gets absolutely hammered and then does that again multiple times a night. That's basically what a work hard, play hard culture is like. And look, going out together, having a great time socially, I'm all for that. A lot of my companies have been like that over the years. It's a lot of fun. Of course it is. But like, the red flag of it comes into A, when you start pressuring people to do it when they don't really want to, and two, like, making it the be all and end all of your culture. Right, that can't be. Just going out and getting drunk together isn't a culture. It can be a great fun thing to do, for sure, but the idea that that's like your entire culture, we work hard and we play hard, is such a red flag. It really, really is, and it's not often the most inclusive of cultures. So I would run, if people are still using that as a genuine brag of their culture, I would genuinely run for the hills when it comes to that. The next phrase that we need to ban that proves the most popular is actually one we've already touched upon, which is deep dive. And someone summarised this perfectly, saying, deep dive, unless we're all wearing scuba gear, this one really needs to go. And I do agree, like, I've sort of touched upon this one earlier, but I have no idea why we use this one, really. And so we really were curious as to how this kind of came about. And as far as we can work out, this links back to Silicon Valley. And apparently IDEO, which was an early Silicon Valley consulting firm, and they're basically known for the original Apple computer mouse, which is pretty cool, but they popularized the term in a 1999 segment of ABC's Nightline. And in this episode, Nightline challenged IDEO to reinvent the shopping cart and featured the Frenzy team's exhausting analysis, aka a deep dive. But they actually didn't invent it. They popularized it for sure, and they kind of brought it back into modern society. But actually, the term goes back a lot further. So according to Merriam-Webster, it's the 16th and 17th century poetry and prose. So we're talking Old English, and it goes like this. When you can dive deep into your own fancies, you think them as familiar to all others as to yourself. I think I pronounced that right. It's quite hard to read. And so basically, that's apparently where it came from. But again, like, I don't think it adds that much value. And I think this is where a lot of the frustration comes from with these phrases. Like I said, is they're often a replacement for someone just doing their job properly. And like, just saying we need to do a deep dive, it sounds like a real sort of, well, you better crack on with that. And I think that's probably why people get so hacked off. And then the final one that we've picked out, and I have to say this one is absolutely on my list, is the phrase, let's take this offline. People hate this term. They really do. And I think the specific reason is it always sounds like you're in trouble or something's happened that you can't share with the group. Because by definition, it sounds like either you're inviting someone outside to have a fight or you're taking them outside to tell them off because you can't do it in front of them. And so everyone sort of goes, ooh. And so if that gets said to you, that is quite an infuriating thing. It really is. It's such a sort of classic, oh, you know, mum or dad are across with me and they're about to tell me off sort of vibe. Like, there's just no scenario where let's take this offline because I just want to tell you what an amazing job you're doing and how incredible you are. Like, Jimmy, this, do you know, no, in the history of corporate whatever, there's no scenario where that's led to sort of a positive meeting. And so again, I think it's like the outcome of these phrases is often kind of the trigger for why people get so frustrated by them so quickly. And in regards to like where this one in particular came from, so basically what was happening was the digital era was taking off, so it's kind of like back into the Windows 2000 sort of vibes. Everyone was online, and then so suddenly everyone immediately went, well, let's go a little bit more old school and we'll take it offline. So by definition, right, offline and online, you kind of need to be in the internet age, so you're not finding much 16th century poetry talking about going offline. So this is definitely something that comes back in a more recent sense. But actually, there is a theory going back to the 60s that actually it was when factories were the dominant industry where this phrase was starting to be used and where its kind of origins are linked to. And so basically, employees working on the production line would have had some responsibility when observing and examining the quality of products that advanced along the conveyor belt. An employee would highlight that a particular product needed further attention as it would have been recognized as damaged or questionable in its development. The worker would suggest taking it off the conveyor belt line for further inspection. In other words, taking it offline, which is quite a clever... my gut feel on that one, by the way, is I think people are just being quite clever with the wording rather than necessarily that's where the oranges is. Do you see what I mean? Like, taking it off the line, they're going, ah, take it offline. So I kind of get why people are sort of saying that, but I'm not quite buying that as that the actual reason of how it all sort of came about. So those are the top five. I mean, there were a lot of other ones that kind of... I mean, there were so many that were suggested. Things like, I've got a hard stop, let's move the needle, all singing from the same hymn sheet. And like, I'm kind of with you on all that. I think hard stop's fine because I think that's more like a legitimate, no, I actually do need to stop. I can't go over. So I think that one's, I have less of an issue with. But all singing from the same hymn sheet, I just think is absolutely horrendous as a phrase for sure. I think for me, the ones that really bug me are the ones where they kind of excuse people not doing their jobs. So for example, as a leader, when they just sort of say that sort of casual motivating nonsense without actually sort of doing the hard work to say, right, this is what I need to do. This is how we're going to do it. All in this together, all that sort of stuff. Like, the what is the ones where they just feel like they're sort of being Mr. O-wise leader and not actually stepping up and delivering their work and doing their best stuff for their business and their team. Like, those are the ones that bug me the most. But I think if I had to pick one thing that annoyed me more than any other, I really do think it's this one, because it's such like a patronizing way to talk to people. And this next voice note summarizes it perfectly for me.
Without doubt, unequivocally, it's the finishing a Zoom or a Teams call 3 minutes early and having the host say to you, I'll give you that 3 minutes back. As if you haven't bored me senseless, Janet, for the last 57 minutes with your nonsense. What will I ever do with this 3 minutes? Good Lord, the world is my oyster, is it not?
I just think that's spot on. I think that's so, so good and so absolutely exactly what most people think when people say that. Because like, it's fine if you give 15 minutes back or 20 minutes or half an hour. Of course, that's much more legitimate thing. But you're so right. If we've taken 57 meetings to have a meeting, which let's be fully honest, right? Most meetings do not need to be that long. There is all sorts of nonsense that kind of goes into every single one of those meetings. And so when on top of that, when you already feel like you've wasted your life, life when someone goes, well, I'll give you those 3 minutes back. He's absolutely spot on. I couldn't agree more. And we're going to leave it there. If you like this sort of content, this is such a sort of new show for us still. We're still sort of experimenting in regards to what we're doing. So if there's anything you'd like us to cover, please do let us know in the comments. Please do let us give us a like and subscribe if you want us to keep going. We really are enjoying putting it together, and I hope you are too. Please do check us out on Spotify as well, or Apple Podcasts. All of this is available for audio also. Otherwise, I look forward to hearing from you all soon. Thank you for all the support so far. Really do appreciate it. I will see you all next week.